This podshow is pleased to bring you Whiskey Westerns on Wednesday, direct from Dodge City, Kansas, featuring rich topics on the legends of the Old West. Whiskey to motivate, Westerns to inspire, get it, play it, drink it.
And we're going to talk a little bit about our second book. Our newest book is called Return of the Great Hunters, Tales of the Frontier. As we go through the book, who were the buffalo hunters? And the first one that really got involved in the buffalo trade that led to the extinction of the buffaloes by 1874. Now, you have to think about the plains in Kansas. Millions and millions of buffalo were moving through. In 1872, the factories up north did not have the hides or the belts that they needed for industry. And so the buffalo hide then was used for many different purposes. But the one key figure that made all of this happen in the trade was a guy by the name of Josiah Moore and his brother, John Moore. So let's talk a little bit about Josiah Moore, the kind of person that he was, and how he got into hunting buffalo along the Saline River in Kansas.
And I'm going to preface this by, I like what you said there about the industry back east at the time. And in today's world, we look so often with disdain on these buffalo hunters and the buffalo slaughter and the waste and what a tragedy it was. And it was. We don't mean to make light of that at all. But what is missing from so many modern dialogues about this issue is the context.
Right.
And you provided a great deal of it right there. You're in the middle of the Industrial Revolution in the United States. Technology is exploding after the Civil War. Factories are booming. New technologies are growing. Businesses are growing. Westward expansion is need of many industries.
But at the time, too, it's an expansion of land. Americans are moving west. But one of the things that's happening here is that the Native Americans are not cooperating in their terms. So another issue becomes, well, if we knock off their food supply, then they'll go back to the reservations and become farmers, like was the idea, right, so that you could take the land from them, which is kind of sad. But at the same time, this is what's happening in America.
It is. It is. And much like the buffalo was everything to the natives, their food, their clothing, their tools, it really was the same thing to the European Americans.
Right.
Whether it be for the leather for the belts, as you mentioned, food to feed everyone,
right,
industry moving west, the hides were huge for clothing, bone china was a major industry. Yes, there was a lot of waste, but certainly there were articles being used to a scale that even the Indians couldn't possibly imagine.
Right.
And by extension, yes, the buffalo did start to decrease in large numbers because of the extra hunting that was going on. We like to blame the Americans and the military and the government for saying, yeah, go kill the buffalo because then we can get rid of the Indians.
Right.
And while that is true, that's not what started the buffalo trade. The buffalo slaughter would have happened naturally anyway. What the United States government, their unofficial position, just exacerbated an already existing issue. It's like, you know what, this is happening, we're not going to stop it.
Right.
And that conversation right there is what brings Josiah Wright Moore into the picture.
Right.
When he went to Fort Dodge, this was again after the Medicine Lodge Peace Treaty, which banned white hunters from hunting south of the Arkansas River.
Because that was reservation land.
That was reservation land. The Arkansas River runs right down the middle of Dodge City.
Right.
Well, at that time, just south of Dodge City. Well, Josiah Wright Moore said he went to the commander for Dodge and essentially asked, am I going to get in trouble if I take a band out there and hunt buffalo? Because the herds down there are huge, and there's just not many. This is where they all go this time of year. He basically asking permission against the Medicine Lodge Peace Treaty, can I go south of the river down into the panhandle of Texas and hunt buffalo? The commander of Fort Dodge looked at him, understanding the United States government's unofficial position, and said, if I was a buffalo hunter, I would go where the buffalo are.
Josiah Wright leaves in the north, in Illinois, I believe, and he's chopping wood for Fort Hays. Mm-hmm. He's not making very much money out of it. He runs into a guy, mountain man, and the mountain man has a lot of experience. His name was White.
Mm-hmm.
And he has quite a story, too.
Oh, Jim White?
Jim White.
Jim White.
So we might talk about Jim White.
At the time, still Jim Wilson, but yeah.
They partner together and go out on the plains to hunt buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about Jim White.
Jim, like I said, early on, Jim Wilson is what he was born. Jim needs to be mentioned in the same conversations as Jedediah Smith and Jim Bridger and all of the greats, even Cody to some extent.
And he's kind of the lost legend that really needs to be talked about a lot more.
He really does. I've had conversations with others, reenactors, actually. And when you bring up Jim White, You can see the look on their face. It's like, okay, you know what you're talking about. Now we can have a conversation. Jim was a former Confederate after the Civil War, tooled around a little bit, got married. After he got married, he and his wife, they moved to Mexico, where his wife left him for a rich man. Jim obviously took exception to this, and he went and gunned the man down.
Got jealous, did he?
Absolutely. Well, who wouldn't? Right. Wives leave you for somebody with more money?
That's right.
Yeah. Jim, being the man that he was, a man of very few words, quite generally as we understand him, just blew the guy away. And this is where it gets interesting, and we really start to see what kind of a man that Jim was. He left Mexico, evidently on foot, with, for that time, an exceedingly excessive bounty. Right. On his head.
An outlaw.
This wasn't just a rich guy. This was apparently a very significant man in Mexico at the time. Jim walked back into Texas on foot with his bounty on his head, Mexican soldiers on his heels, changed his name to Jim White, wound up in Dodge City and many other places.
And Fort Hayes, when Josiah, and that's where the buffalo were at the particular time, and they become buffalo hunters. Them together. And that story that Brad just talked about, that meeting, is in the first chapter of Return of the Great Hunters, Tales of Frontier. So our next character in Return of the Great Hunters, we'd want to talk about probably George W. Hoodoo Brown. And then his hunting partner, Prairie Dog Morrow.
Prairie Dog Morrow. Both fascinating characters.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Hoodoo Brown.
Mike, I'm drinking all the whiskey here. I'm starting to feel bad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That help you out a little bit?
Fair enough. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
I can't stop drinking that.
I think I'll take another swig.
All right. Well, back to the whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
George Brown, Hoodoo Brown, is probably most significant during these times, not just for his buffalo hunting, but he and his partner built the second permanent establishment in Dodge City. Guess what it was? Another saloon selling whiskey.
Right.
That was the business that Dodge was in. Well, George also had quite a career in addition to, the buffalo hunting with Dave Morrill, built the second saloon, credited as one of the founders of Dodge City. We often just look back to George Hoover, who started the first establishment, but it was just a matter of days before Hoodoo Brown had opened his just about next door. And there really wasn't any competition because there was so much business to go around that Buffalo City, Dodge City, became the boom town that it was.
Well, in the story, actually what happened, he remembers that out at Fort Dodge, there was a saloon out there that served whiskey.
Right.
And when he went out there.
The cellar store.
Yeah, when he went out there to get his share of whiskey, he found out it wasn't being sold anymore.
Mm-hmm. And it had already been shut down because of the incident with the drunken lieutenant.
Right.
Punching Colonel Dodge.
Right. And Lieutenant Turner.
Turner.
And so Colonel Dodge goes in, tells Mr. Robert Wright, he says, no more sale of whiskey here at the fort. He was disappointed, and he goes out on the plains. He says, but I know where there's whiskey being sold. And he goes out on the plains, and he says, wow, this is a great idea. Leaves and goes to Russell, Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Which is not too far from Hayes.
Right.
Just
he first goes to Hayes. There's no lumber to be found. And then he goes
to
Russell. And brings all the lumber back and builds a small saloon. So that's a good story about hoodoo. Here is his partner at the time is Prairie Dog Morrow.
Morrow also quite the career. Evidently, the great uncle or some familiar relationship, great uncle, I think is what it was, of Anne Morrow, who married Charles Lindbergh. That's generally been accepted. There's been a lot of family research being done, but I mean, it's been told since Charles Lindbergh was alive.
I'll be darned.
And when he came to Dodge, it was because there was family here. Morrow was also quite a character. He did a little bit of everything. Of course, buffalo hunting, saloon owning. He was a lawman in Dodge for quite some time.
Right.
And his probably, even with all that, his biggest claim to fame is he devised a rather ingenious trap to catch prairie dogs.
Right.
And he would sell them to people traveling through on the train. That's an entrepreneur.
It's a rodent. Would go out and catch rodents and then go to a train station and sell them to people that were traveling north as a pet.
Mm-hmm.
That I agree, and that's really
quite a bit of money.
And that's really how he got his name,
Prairie Dog Morrow,
because he was catching prairie dogs, selling rodents to people at the train station,
selling vermin to tourists.
Vermin. That story in itself is in Return of the Great Hunters, and it's very interesting that conversation, the first saloon, first and second saloon, how Dodge City came about, is actually in the book as well. The last character, which the book is actually named after, Return of the Great Hunters, it's 1874. Now, what you have to imagine is from 1872 to 1874, those million buffaloes are all being killed off.
Mm-hmm.
On the south side and the north side, there are no more buffaloes. So the Return of the Great Hunters is really the story about Billy Dixon coming to Dodge City. And they all gathered together, knowing that there are some buffalo remaining in Texas. Billy Dixon is our next character. Mm. And he takes about half the book because we lead into the Battle of Adobe Walls and leaving Dodge in 1874. But let's talk a little bit about Billy Dixon and why he is such a legend in his own making.
Well, that's a great way of putting it. He really was. And Billy, like most of these folks, Billy crossed paths with everyone. We know so much about all of these relationships because he wrote, some would say his wife wrote, as he dictated, a fantastic autobiography.
Life and Times of Billy
Life
Dixon.
Life and Billy Dixon. Just a fascinating character. Started out early on, was an absolute legend, as you say. And when the Adobe Walls, the second Adobe Walls fort, buff trading post, we'll say, was established in the Texas Panhandle, Billy was one of the many Dodge City buffalo hunters that moved down there. And you could simplify the whole Adobe Walls thing and see it was essentially just nothing more than a Dodge City trading post.
Exactly, because you have Charles Rath who moves out there.
Right, Rath is the king of the mercantile and the buffalo trade in Dodge City, and like many others, like Josiah Wright Moore, he goes where the buffalo are. say, why spend all the money transporting everything back here? We'll just go down to Texas, set up in the middle of the biggest buffalo herd on the Great Plains, and conduct all of our business right there. And then when it's all done, we'll bring it all back to Dodge. That's exactly what they did. Except for they misjudged the enmity of the Cheyenne.
Well, still were not, the Indians were still not cooperating too well.
Well, why would they?
All of them got off the reservation at the same time.
Mm-hmm. They saw the Medicine Lodge peace treaty already being broken. They'd had enough of it. There was a Cheyenne medicine man by the name of Isatiah.
Isatiah, right.
Who had become the right-hand man of the Cheyenne chief.
Well, he saw visions.
Yeah.
Visions. He was a visionary, and they all believed him. I don't know how much peyote they were smoking at the time, but...
Well, it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
It worked. He whipped not just the Cheyenne, but the Arapaho, all the other, the Southern Plains tribes together, and we need to put a stop to this. And like I said, it worked. Whatever visions and message that he was selling, one of the largest Indian groupings, alliances, basically until
bringing
Custer.
Bringing all the tribes together, and something the Comanches didn't do in their natural rights was to do a sun dance.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 700 Indians on the plains, all coming together. You have Isatiah as their spiritual being, and he then says, we need to do a sun dance, and they get all riled up, and you have 700 of them riding across the prairie, and where are they headed?
They're all heading to Adobe Walls.
And why are they headed to Adobe Walls?
Because that's where the buffalo hunters are.
And they are not happy.
They are going to wipe them out.
Okay. And so this is where the character of Bat Masterson,
mm-hmm.
Billy Dixon, and all of these buffalo hunters. But one thing the buffalo hunter had that the Indians did not have was what? That Sharps 50
that
rifle.
The Big 50. And there were several more around. It was a very popular rifle for buffalo hunting. You know, that's a big caliber rifle, and that'll bring down an elephant.
They would do their own loads, and mm-hmm. they would overload the shell with additional powder.
Right.
Anyway, Billy Dixon becomes famous at this Battle of Adobe Walls. What does he do to make his mark in history?
Well, he was already quite a legendary buffalo hunter in his own time.
And he was a...
And well-known as a marksman.
And he was also a scout.
He was a scout under General Miles.
Right.
Which is where he knew Bat Masterson from. Right. They served the same. But during this Adobe Walls fight, he becomes known for the, I guess at the start of the American Revolution was the shot heard around the world.
Right.
This was the second best shot, or the second most significant shot in American history.
And they're still doing studies over this shot.
Right. There are still today United States military snipers trying to replicate the shot that Billy Dixon made with a 50 caliber buffalo gun.
Right.
And can't do it. Even though our range is much larger, more accurate than really what he had. But what happened is he basically just hauled off, and as the Indians were retreating, he saw an Indian mount on horseback over the rise, which happened to be the chief. And he thought, you know, I'll give it a shot. Pulled his gun, leveled it up over the rise, pulled the trigger, and knocked him off his horse.
And
that was just about the end of the battle, because even Isatiah thought,
yeah,
the medicine is too strong.
Well, Isatiah, he claimed that his horse was bulletproof.
Right.
And so during the first day of the battle, his horse gets shot out from him. So the faith
is already deteriorated.
Yeah. What's interesting about that shot is that it's, what, second or third day of the battle? Because goes on and on.
Third day.
And about the third day, he goes out and he says, I'm going to settle this. And he points his gun up on the ridge. Now, how far of a shot was that?
About 7/10 of a mile.
takes that shot, knocks the Indian off the horse, and that seems to end all of the...
That's about the end of the fight.
Quanah Parker was also involved in that battle, and he got shot right... He got wounded at the first on the first day. But all of that story about the Battle of Adobe Walls, Billy Dixon, Turn of the Great Hunters, is in the last few chapters of the book. Now, what people don't quite understand is that right after that battle, the Red River War starts. So these 40
That's
buffalo
really what
hunters
started it, you could argue.
Out in the Texas Plains starts an Indian war called the Red River War. So anyway, Brad, do you want to say anything else about the book?
They're fantastic. Obviously, we think so. And what I think we should add is that even though Return of the Great Hunters is our second book,
right?
This is really what started this whole project, the podcasts and everything.
You're right.
Man in a Black Derby Hat wound up kind of being a segue because we had just so much great Bat Masterson vignettes that we've just got to put this one out. But Return of the Great Hunters has been the passion project since day one. It's been the end game since we started.
And that book is really about a two-year make. We've been at it for 2 years, and the Return of the Great Hunters is really their first project, like Brad said. We have another one that we're working on, which is a segue to this one, which is going to be The Legends of Dodge City, Tales of the West. We're still a little bit down the road with that one. That may not come out until next year. These two are now available on Amazon.com. You can buy them in paperback. And the nice thing about these books, they're the scripts to our podcast. So basically, you can turn to a chapter in the book, find it, we'll read it, and it's word for word.
Yeah, just scan the QR code that's in the book and listen to it along. It's very much like an audio book. You're stuck listening to me while you're reading along. You can do it either way, but either way, we think it's a great experience.
And Brad does such a wonderful job of reading these stories. And it's been a great partnership for the last 2 years.
It's been a joy. It's been fun. 2 years, I mean, we do this anyway, but it's you folks that keep listening, keep us doing this too. Thank you very much for continuing to listen, for your support, for your suggestions. The criticisms that we've got have helped.
Much so. In fact, some of the people that have written in, they've talked to us about sound quality. They've talked to us about a lot of different things that they would like to see in the future. So if you would like to contact us and give some suggestions or at least talk to us about your experiences as a listener, you can write us at wildwestpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's wildwestpodcast@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. We promote the different podcasts that we're doing, the Whiskey and Westerns. We have Whiskey and Westerns on YouTube. So all of these links we're talking about will be a part of the posting of this podcast. And how many different channels do we have, Brad, right now?
We got the YouTube, the
Buzzsprout.
Buzzsprout. That's probably the biggest one. I can't even remember all the names. You're the more the technical guy, but I'd say there's probably at least five that I can think of.
And over, I think even worldwide, I think we're touching about 14,000 or 1,400 different cities across the world.
Japan, Germany,
Ireland, England, Netherlands, United States, all of those people are listening to our podcast. So I'd like to close now. Toast, Brad. We have to have another little pour here before we close out. But thank you again for listening to our podcast, Whiskey and Westerns on Wednesday. It's all about the celebration of the frontier, bringing the true stories, the legends of Broad City together. Let's toast.
Well, since we are toasting, I feel that this might be the appropriate time to offer an apology to our audience.
Okay.
You may have noticed it's been quite some time since we've done a Whiskey and Westerns, and our output has been slow of late this last couple of months, and that's my fault.
Well, I don't know if that's a fault or not. I think it's a part of life celebration. Because, Brad, you just got married just recently.
I got married in November.
Yeah.
I did.
So that would just distract any man.
It did. Well, she is quite a distraction. Oh, you've met my wife.
Yeah, she's a beautiful woman.
That's what's been going on in my life and our lives. Hopefully, we're going to get on a little more regular schedule.
Right.
She's a big fan of what we do here. So I would like to toast
to a new family.
Toast to a new family.
A new life.
My wife and her support.
Absolutely.
And your support as well for keeping us going. Thank you very much as we celebrate the American West.
That's it for now. We hope you enjoyed our show, and remember you can check out all of our Wild West podcast shows on Player FM series Wild West Podcast, iTunes Podcast, Spotify, Amazon Anypod, or at wildwestpodcast.buzzsprout.com.